Hello all, and welcome to another episode of Your One Black Friend. I am your hostess, Jolie. You can call me Joe. First and foremost, wanted to apologize for the mic issues I've been having. A lot of you guys have been commenting that it's hard to hear. It's not intentional. This mic is a piece of shit. If you are looking to start a podcast, do not purchase the Shure MV7. I actually ended up putting a sticker. This is like an anti-advertisement. You have anti-matter and matter. This is an anti-advertisement. I actually ended up putting a sticker over the microphone. And I'm going to have to do some post-production work after this is recorded, because this has just been problems from the start. So if you are listening and you're like, I should start my own podcast, do not buy this mic. Just getting it off my chest. Anyway, I wanted to start with a conversation about knowledge, right? So we're piggybacking off of the last episode where I talked about what do we really know, and how the things that we know, or we think we know, kind of blind us from things that could be right in front of our faces. So this episode, I wanted to perform something of what is called a thought experiment, right? It's just something that we can do in our minds. I cannot run this in a lab. I cannot prove anything that I'm about to say. And I don't actually want to be able to prove anything I'm about to say, because it's not about proof. This podcast, this episode, this discussion isn't about proving anything. It's about thought experiment. It's about thinking outside of the box. It's about thinking, perceiving in a different way, right? So I wanted you to come with me on this journey, so to speak, and let's kind of think about the things that we know. And let's see if we can push back a bit against it. Let's start with one we know for sure, that we are the most intelligent life forms on this planet. Now, as laughable as that sounds, the majority of people, when you ask, believe this. They believe that humanity, the human race, as we see it, this is the best. Right? We are the apex predators on Earth. And essentially, we have styled ourselves as the barometer, as the measure, as the rule stick in which intelligence should take form, which means that anything that falls below this metric is not considered intelligent. But it also means that anything that doesn't look human cannot be classified as intelligent. Anything that doesn't behave human cannot be classified as intelligent. And it also kind of limits us to our present understanding right now and our present form right now. Like, if you think of quote unquote evolution, or you rephrase or reimagine evolution as adaptation and the development of new habits over time. Rupert Sheldrake talked about this in his book on the morphic resonance. I promise you I can talk. The book is called The Past is the Present. If you look at evolution, not as random mutation over time, but as habits, all right, developed over a long period of time, given enough time, intelligence will take different forms. If you want to focus on the human measure of intelligence, then human intelligence will take different form. We would theoretically, quote unquote, evolve into something that we would not be able to identify in time. But a lot of people who are discounting measures of intelligence are also sort of, or I should say, they're not discounting measures of intelligence. A lot of people who are saying that we are the measure of intelligence, and so we hold everything to our standards, are not thinking of how the measuring stick is subject to change over time. It's also a very materialistic perspective, right? So a lot of our mainstream scientists, Western scientists specifically, are still stuck on a material perception, even though quantum physics says that we're not really material. We're not just material. Things exist in both wave and particulate form, all right? So if you hyper-focus on just the particulate presentation of matter, then you miss the wave function. All right. And you sort of blind yourself to a greater aspect of reality simply because you cannot perceive it with your senses. There is a TV show on Apple. I've not watched it, but it features Jason Momoa. And it's humanity in a dystopian reality where they're born. I believe they're born either without sight or the ability to hear. One of those. I want to say hearing. Either way, if there was some sort of like universal disaster or mutation that caused, let's say it's a disease that causes all of humanity to lose a particular sense, let's say the sense of sight, and then from that point on, because it's a sort of dystopian like issue, right? Because if that happens, if all of a sudden 8 billion human beings, the so-called apex predators of this reality, at least in this dimension, lose the ability simultaneously to be able to see due to some sort of contagion, then our society falls apart. Now you take that and you project that like 2,000 years into the future, surely we adapt and we will evolve into different beings, right? Quote unquote, evolve, develop new habits and present as different beings. But because the human beings that will then exist 2,000 years from now in this weird reality, this dystopian reality, would not have experienced sight for themselves, it would be hard for them to conceptualize the ability of being able to see color, right? Because they've never experienced it. And then I would argue that then their scientists would basically say that there's no such thing as color, right? And then their perception of reality would be based on their four senses. And I would argue that over time, their sense of hearing might become heightened, right? And they begin to quote unquote see through hearing. But the perception of color, viewing sort of photonic expressions of, you know, light particles, that's going to be gone. And then you project that 10,000 years into the future, forget about it. That's a whole different species. The world looks a completely different way than it does, or that it does now, or what it would. Because then the human beings at that moment in space-time, 10,000 years from now, will, assuming they stay the apex predators of this reality, or that reality rather, would have adapted to have nature reflect their shortcomings, right? And so then the arrogance in which they perceive reality will just get perpetuated and passed on over and over again. We have five senses and we are able to see only, I believe it's 5% of matter that is visible to us. There's something called dark matter. I talk about this all like over and over again because it's worth paying attention to, and it's worth repeating that 95% of reality is invisible to us. I'm not even talking about parallel universes and alternate dimensions. Just reality, base level reality, is invisible to us. We cannot see it. We are limited. And yet we continue to sort of operate from this mindset that we know things, and that our perspective, our perception of reality based on our extremely limited vantage point is the standard, is the status quo. Why would an intelligent life form have to be visible to us in order to exist? This is something I noticed with TV shows, for example, and I understand why, because the TV show is just entertainment. But whenever they show aliens, one, aliens always look humanoid, and two, they always happen to speak English. This is not even just with aliens. They do this with like any sort of retelling. They all have the English accent, right? No matter what, if it's like elves or whatever, everybody's got the same British accent. And I get it, it's entertainment, but that is a reflection. That perception is a reflection on the limitation that we impose on ourselves outside of the entertainment world, like in the real world. We expect that if an alien came to this planet, it would travel using, you know, like burning fossil fuels, because that's how we are trying to leave our planet. I keep talking about a video. I think I'm going to post it to the Telegram group, the link. I'm not sure yet, but I need to change the intro. The video I'm referring to is why I don't think we've actually gone to the moon. I will post it publicly, I think. I'm still waffling on it. But if I don't, I probably will post the link to it through my Telegram group. So if you've not joined the Telegram group, please do. For right now, it's still open. There will come a time when it will be closed. So people who have got in will be able to stay in. But after a certain point, once my website launches, you will no longer be able to access the Telegram group unless you've already been a member and you're a flagship member, without a subscription, right? You don't have to pay a subscription every time, you know, every month to stay in the group, but you will no longer be able to have access to the link. unless you sort of joined the membership. So just bear that in mind. But sidebar, right now, there is an extreme, there's something called the Van Allen radiation belt. But taking that aside, let's not even talk about how radiation would damage the human form, any sort of human being trying to leave and come back into our atmosphere. That's there. And it's around our atmosphere. It exists right now. In addition to the radiation belt, there's also the thermosphere, which is an extremely hot atmosphere also around the planet. Right. So it gets up to about 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, anywhere from 2,000 degrees to 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the thermosphere. This is not like a theoretical thing. It's actually, you can Google it. It is called the thermosphere, and it's called the thermosphere because it's hot as fuck. That is not the scientific explanation for it. That's the layman terms. Like, that's why, because it's a temperature, thermostatically, like it's hot. It gets hot. To put things into perspective, lava is about 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So the thermosphere is about 2.5 times hotter than, approximately, than lava. Okay, it's hot as fuck. So we somehow were able to go through that. We somehow, with Apollo 11, please Google pictures of what Apollo 11 looked like. Right. We were able to use a thing with foil and everything like that. Anyway, too. And resin that they put it together. They were able to do that, get through the thermosphere using God knows what special magical instruments. They were able to get past the thermosphere. Right. And come back without, like, safely. Nobody exceeding temperatures of, there were twice, like 2.5 times as hot as lava. Whatever technology that they have, can they please, let's see a visual representation of just somebody using that same technology that they use to exit the thermosphere. Can they do that just with basic lava? Let's see what they've done, like how they were able to achieve that. But I would love a demonstration of that. That's the one thing that I think a lot of people miss. I have other things on this video where I talk about it, but the biggest thing that is missed is like just the sheer temperature. It's hot. I mean, common sense, it's hot. And just if you look at the ingredients, not the ingredients, the material in which Apollo 11 was created with, was built with, it doesn't make any sense. Like that, what it was constructed from would not have been able to permeate those high temperatures. I've not heard too many people talking about that, but it was sort of common sense to me. Everything else that kind of adds to that, you can add to the argument. But the biggest thing for me was, it's hot as shit in the thermosphere. How do they get past that with things that are that will not withstand these temperatures? It just won't. Even the International Space Station does not operate past a certain point in space, because it would obviously destroy the space shuttle. They can't even launch, I will post a video, they can't even launch satellites beyond low Earth orbit because they can't, because of these sort of issues I'm talking about. Like, it's just, they're trying to do things like mechanics and heat. I don't know, unless they somehow have developed some sort of technology that will repel heat, like a repulsion technology. But we don't have that. If we did have that, and we did have it in the 60s, we would have extraordinary vehicles right now. Okay, but that's another side. I don't even know how I got off on that tangent. Like, we keep thinking that an alien would have to come into our planet in humanoid form, in humanoid form, right? Using what limitations? Like, our limitations to our intelligence, because we're limited. Like, trying to leave the planet using combustible fuel, you know, and metal, that's a reflection of the limitations of our creativity and our intelligence. And so we would expect that aliens would sort of proceed in the same way. That's why people keep thinking that the spaceships that we see, UFOs, things like that, are coming from out of space. And it's why I keep saying that I don't think they're coming from out of space, because the Van Allen radiation belt and the thermosphere, the temperature restrictions, they're just, those two alone are a barrier that will keep any intelligent life form, at least from coming through, at least with our level of technology. Like, we should not expect them to come through in combustible, you know, using combustible fuels and metallic spacecrafts, even though we keep seeing the same sort of idea repeated over and over again in all of our films, right? Take me to your leader, they drop down the metal, da da da. And not to say that there aren't UFOs. I'm just saying that they're not coming from another planet. I'm saying that they may, remember, this is just a thought experiment, they may be coming from our plane of existence right now. If I were to travel, I would not necessarily have to take the form of a human being, right? Like, that's our limitation, that's our projection. I could look like anything. I could look like nothing. Bees can see more complex imagery than we are. I've argued in past episodes that perhaps sound itself could be an intelligence. I want to discuss the possibility or the potential that could even a speck of dust, something that appears to us as a speck of dust, could that be? Could intelligence take a form like that? But I think Michio Kaku talked about this in his book, Parallel Worlds, about how microscopic wormholes are consistently, you know, coming into and out of existence in our reality. Now, if I were an intelligent life form that was non-human from another dimension or another reality, and I was much more intelligent than the human race, I would figure out a way to map, because nothing's random in our reality, even though it appears random, nothing is. So I would figure out over time how to map where all of these wormholes, microscopic to us, would be emerging. And then I'd figure out a way to send. Right. The show must go on. For those of you watching visually, my camera overheated and shut down, so I had to switch to my desktop. I'm not entirely sure what keeps happening. This is like the third time. Every time I've tried to record this episode, my camera overheats. And the first time I did it, I just took it off, disconnected, let it cool, started the whole episode over, tried to record it again. It's overheating again. So I'm just going to use my built-in desktop and go from there. I'm going to finish what I'm going to say. You know, one thing I've learned is to not really get upset, because getting upset about things not going the way you want it to go literally does nothing, right? This is a lesson that I've had to learn. But I think it's one of those lessons that I'm grateful that I did learn, because it stopped this sort of exertion of emotional energy. Me getting upset about something not going the way I want it to go does not make the thing go the way I want it to go. It's just me wasting energy, right? And two, I've often found that sometimes when things don't go the way I want it to go, it's in preparation for something new, something different. You know, or it's just something as simple as I just need to do something differently and just keep it moving. So I think I started this episode complaining about how my microphone is shit. Now it looks like my camera may be shit as well. But we move. We're going to get the information out there one way or another. So I have argued in past episodes that could an intelligence take the form of sound or something that appears as sound to us. And what now I'm saying is, could intelligence take a form of even something that's microscopic? Because once again, we're operating with the mindset that intelligence would have to be human. It would have to be about our height, sound like us, and preferably, I guess, with a British accent. And if it doesn't, then it's some sort of monster, right? I love Doctor Who. The way they sort of present their aliens, so for the most part, are they're largely all humanoid. Every once in a while, you'll see like a Dalek or like a Cyberman, but for the most part, they're still human. Or if they're not, the opposite of just sort of like some monstrosity or some reptilian, something or another. But I would like to think of quote unquote intelligent life forms as, especially from out of this dimension. We'll table UFO discussions for later, although you guys at this point know how I feel about UFOs. But I would like to think that intelligent life forms wouldn't always present in the way that we have been conditioned to accept or to expect, right? So would it take the form, could it take the form of a something that appears microscopic to us, a life form that appears microscopic to us? Very well could be, especially like I said, or I was saying before it got shut down. If there are microscopic wormholes consistently coming in and out of existence, and I was an intelligent life form, or I belong to a species of intelligent life forms, it wouldn't be particularly difficult to map and measure over time, giving enough time, right? And you have to take time out of the equation in the way that we understand time. Not in the TikTok like our clock, because this is our measure of time. We have decided to measure time using the sun, the movement of the sun, and in some cultures, the moon. But that's not to say that parallel universes and other intelligent life forms would measure time in the same way. And it's also not to say that in other dimensions, time moves the same way that we experience it. So maybe for them, 1 year is a millennia for us, right? So given enough time for them, they would and could effectively map out wormholes that we essentially act like trains almost, where they can pass through to visit other dimensions. And I could make the argument that we could be surrounded by intelligence all the time. Like our universe could be absolutely teeming with intelligence. To go back to the discussion about Venus, we are told that these planets, Venus, right, and Mars, are uninhabited. Venus in particular is interesting to me because it has this sort of like impermeable ball of gas that surrounds or encases the planet. So they're saying that like we can't get past it. We can't go through it. And the argument that I made is, well, we can't even get past our atmosphere, but we're here, right? So if we can't get past our atmosphere, put the moon landing aside, let's just say that maybe that didn't happen. If we cannot get past our atmosphere, then are we fair in assuming that Venus and planets like Venus are uninhabited? Like the leap of logic for us to be able to say that, but well, we can't get there. We can't send anything through there, right? Because whatever, like the ball of gas that surrounds Venus, it's so dense and so hot and so it's impermeable. So then there, it must be uninhabited. But then the inverse is also happening here, and yet we're fine. And who is to say, like, they've assumed that it would be like just mostly whatever, but they don't know. If you can't send a probe past a certain point, past this sort of like ball of gas that encircles and encapsulates Venus, then you really don't know what Venus is made of. They could be a thriving metropolis. They could be intelligent, even we could say intelligent humanoids, because Venus, Mars, Earth, Mars, Venus, Earth are all within the Goldilocks zone of the sun. So they do fall in within the category, which is why, you know, through time, some people have speculated that maybe Mars had life, right? In the past, and then something happened there. And I've argued that if Mars had life, it may still have life, but maybe not on the surface. Just like there might be life below the surface of Earth as well that we don't have access to. It's amazing. In this moment in space-time, when you actually think about it, on Earth right now, all different time zones exist simultaneously. What do I mean by that? You can go, there are places on this planet that you can go to where people are still living like they did 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, all right now. It's almost like a time capsule. So while I'm able here to talk to you on a piece of shit camera and a piece of shit microphone, right, I'm still grateful because I'm able to sort of engage in this way. There are people right now existing in 2023 by our measure of time that don't even know that these sort of technologies exist. That still have to, you know, they don't have toilet paper, that have to go to the stream and fish water, things like that. Like that are still living, hunters, gatherers, herdsmen, farmers, that are still existing right now. And it's all laid out in space time right now. In a way, we are experiencing all aspects of time simultaneously right now on Earth. And you could fly to these places. You don't need a time machine. Although I've made the argument that a plane itself could very well be some sort of time machine. And we wouldn't really know. I mean, I don't know if mankind isn't meant to go the speeds that a plane can go. And yet we've done it. Could we be messing with, or have we messed about with something that we don't understand? Who really knows? We don't know anything, right? But to take that a step further, to go back to my point that I was making, and I've made or attempted to make, or at least danced around, what if there's more than seven continents? What if there's more than seven planets? What if what we think of as this planet, right, there's more and then more and then more. A friend of mine and I were having a discussion about like stories like the Epic of Gilgamesh, and I think she was watching a documentary on aliens. But somehow whenever there's discussions on aliens, they always also end up being religious, which is fascinating to me. Gods always come up. Something to think about. But also, giants kept coming up. Giants. And, you know, we are blinded by our limitations, right? Our perceptual limitations, our what we're told, our cognitive limitations of what is possible, right? So we are told that there's no such thing as giants, that giants couldn't have walked the face of the earth. But look, for the sake of a thought experiment, what if, I'm not saying that they did, but I'm saying that maybe we don't know. Because the thing about time is that time has a way of destroying evidence just because of its nature. What if we're just a microcosm, right? For those of you who aren't watching visually, I'm sort of making a weird C with my hand. I'm trying to make a circle, but what if we're just a microcosm, right? But then there's a macrocosm. And we're just sort of sequestered, you know, here. I think about Jupiter, random aside. So that's a discussion on, could there have been giants on Earth? Why does it keep coming up? Why do all of these cultures keep talking about the same sort of thing? It's like dragons, right? Dragons sort of make recurring appearances throughout all of the cultures, but yet we're told that they're mythical creature. A friend of mine mentioned this. She said in the Chinese zodiac, all animals exist, and then there's also the year of the dragon, the Chinese calendar, right? So there's a rat, which is a real creature. There's a dog, there's a pig, there's an ox, there's an actual dragon, and there's also a snake. So maybe it's not a mythical creature. Maybe myths had been built around them, like the ability to breathe fire. But what if these things are real? We have this thing that we do. It's kind of like teenagers, where we just discount our predecessors, right? Our ancestors. We just assume that they were just making things up and were completely stupid. And so the things that they talked about and they wrote about weren't actually true or were fiction. Although we're finding now with physics and things like that, that a lot of the things that were written in ancient scriptures, not like the Bible, I'm talking about like the Vedic scriptures, like thousands and thousands of years older. I'm talking about Egyptian books of the, you know, of the dead and their knowledge that have existed. They might have had a greater understanding, a better understanding of the nature of our reality than we presently do. I think our modern scientists are now sort of skirting around their discoveries and things that were written about thousands of years ago by older ancient civilizations. But can we still keep operating with this mindset that we know everything that there is to know now? And is it possible that our understanding of reality could be skewed? I understand that we have to kind of live our day-to-day existence. I get it. And maybe people don't have the free time or the space to sort of philosophize about these sort of ideas. But I don't know. I mean, I've listened to what a lot of people have to talk about. And it's usually things like Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I think you do have space. If you've got time, do people still watch that show? If you've got time to watch that show, I think you have time to sort of muse on whether or not we are alone on this planet, in this plane, in this dimension. Is Venus actually occupied? And just because we can't get to it doesn't mean that they're not there. And does Jupiter contain a race of gas giants? Just want to throw that out there. Who knows? Because if we never actually went to the moon, then you can kind of throw everything else out. Like everything else that they're saying really is an assumption about all these other planets. I've had people message, whenever I talk about like planets, they say that anything that's the heliocentric model is a lie, that it's not planets, they're planes. I don't typically like to argue with people on that regard. Like if that's what you want to believe, believe it. And I'm not going to say that they're absolutely wrong. So at the end of the day, I don't know. But I do kind of like the idea of thinking about this world as a plane, as a dimension even, not just a plane, but beyond that, a dimension. Because then you can start thinking about extraterrestrials being extra dimensional beings, right? From other dimensions other than this one. And then your interpretation of what an extra dimensional entity would look like or sound like, if you could even perceive them, that should expand your mind even more. Could there be creatures that are made of antimatter? Could there be creatures that are made of dark matter? Keep in mind that we are material. These are physical forms are. So by definition, if antimatter does exist, I'm sorry, not antimatter, if dark matter does exist, and dark matter doesn't mean it's dark, it just means that we can't perceive it, right? Then there has to be entities that are made of dark matter. Dun, dun, dun. Could be a dark matter me right there. I'm pointing to a painting for those of you who are watching the video. She kind of looks like me a bit. Yeah, we wouldn't know. Like, ignorance is dangerous, if we're being completely honest. And so is having a closed mind. I really do try to be mindful of not acting like I know as much as I've read, and for as much as I can sort of speculate on, I don't really know anything. And that's been a recurring theme. And the reason why it recurs and repeats on this podcast is because I kind of want you guys to get into that idea, into that mindset, because operating from that standpoint of, you know what do I actually know, is liberating. It is a liberating pursuit. It's a liberating exercise, because to go back, for example, to things not going the way you expect them to go, right? I started this recording having issues with my microphone, and then I had issues with my camera. If I reacted in anger, that reaction is operating from the premise that, one, things could have gone a better way or a different way too, that I know what a better way is, right? I assume that it's in my best interest to have a camera that's recording in HD capturing me, you know. Who knows if this camera shutting down wasn't actually beneficial to me. A lot of you that have been complaining about the sound being an issue, I apologize for that. But I remember a comment when somebody said that they had to listen in absolute silence in order to hear what I said. And I was like, well, who knows if that was not the intention, that the reason why my microphone had been misbehaving is for that individual to sit still and quietly listen and get into the habit of listening. So everything in this world is like dominoes, right? We don't know why certain things happen. And certain things happening in a particular way could be not for our benefit, but could be for somebody else's benefit. And maybe not even necessarily in this moment in space-time, but hundreds or thousands of years from now. So why then react? You know what I mean? Like, just fix what you can fix and keep it moving. Maybe it's I needed to record. Maybe having the fucking camera on, whatever setting is on me, trained on me, was dangerous, and I wouldn't know. I mean, it sounds wild Right? Sounds like, why would an HD camera be dangerous? I don't know. You don't know. There's glass. And how does a camera work? Exactly. I don't know. So when things like that happen, I have learned and I am learning to just go, you know what? That was what was supposed to happen. I'll fix it later and keep it moving. At the end of the day, what my intention was I needed to record a podcast. And my voice didn't give out. And I had a backup camera. And hopefully this microphone isn't terrible. Like I said, I will adjust it later. So what I intended to do is still being done. Whether or not it's how I intended it, that's different. And who knows why it was never, this episode was just never going to be recorded in HD on my Sony A7 piece of shit. But so be it. Here we are. Right. You keep it moving. You never know. You never know. And who knows, maybe even me telling the story is inspirational to somebody else who maybe feels like everything has to be perfect in order to move in a particular way. And so that was me having to go through this and then saying, hey, listen, you just have to roll with things. It was just the exact inspiration that whoever is listening to, where this resonates with, needed to hear. I'm just one piece in a cog. I am a memory in a mind of a universal collective mind. And so me just existing in this moment in space time, however great I may quote think I am, I'm still just a very small piece. I'm still just a drop, all things considered. So getting all sort of in my ankles about something not going the way I want it to go really is a waste of energy and doesn't take into consideration the greater picture. Now let's go to gods. I wrote in my book, gods are cannibals. When I say god, I don't mean how I've talked about in the past, god's souls, right? I do think that we have to make the distinction that there are fragments of the collective consciousness that exists and continue to exist through space-time, and they take on various forms, like avatars, right? They exist in different forms. So you could be a god soul. You could be a physical incarnation of a small collective consciousness existing or experiencing itself through the present avatar that you're existing in right now. But then there are these other things that I've alluded to. These, we'll call them what they are, false gods. They have no bodies of their own. They have no avatars of their own. They have no forms of their own. And they attach themselves to encapsulated and enclosed and encased gods. They attach themselves to human beings, people, right? Souls like you and I. And then they work through them and they use the inherent ability of the human body to actualize change in this reality. If they truly were God, they wouldn't need you to act on their behalf. If you think about a lot of these like biblical stories, religious stories, when particularly in the Bible, that this Yahweh entity, he wants something done, he uses or sends other people to do things, which is wild to me because how are you God and yet you need other people to do things? It's not that you're a king, you are the creator of everything. Why can't you, in a snap of a finger, do things? Like the story of Moses, for example, comes to mind when he is essentially dueling with the Egyptian magicians with the rods and turning the rods, their staffs, into snakes. So what's the point? What's the point of that? If this is an all-knowing, all-powerful God, why does it need to do that? Why does it need to challenge the Egyptian magicians at this weird game of like, I don't know, magician, like what is that show, Yu-Gi-Oh, like a dueling of magicians? I don't really like think about it, right? So there are there could be interdimensional parasites that project themselves into this reality as quote-unquote gods, and I'm not talking about the ones who actually inhabit form and exist as avatars and then can change, you know, affect change in this reality. I'm talking about things that you cannot physically see or perceive and that they cannot physically affect change in this reality without you. I'm talking about thought forms and magical servitors these are things that need to be summoned, and then you need to worship, and then eventually they basically ask for sacrifices and things like that. That's weird to me. And I've always wondered if that may be the what we call gods, or depending on where or what mindset you operate out of, thought forms, tulpas, magical servitors, what we've come to know of for the most part as God, are they part of the species of some sort of intelligence? I don't want to say greater intelligence, but definitely a non-physical intelligence that has plagued humanity over time, and that use humanity's ability to affect change in this dimension because they are interdimensional, right? So if I go to a different dimension, right? Let's say without like exiting my body, like not while sleeping or something like that, if I physically transfer to a different dimension, I wouldn't be able to affect change in that dimension because I'm not of that dimension. I'm a four-dimensional being, a three or four-dimensional being, depending on who you ask. I certainly cannot even conceptualize a sixth or seventh dimension, or even a negative one or negative two dimension. I can't even conceptualize what that would look like, at least while in this form, right? So if I were, though, and I was able to, let's say I go down to the second dimension, I can't really influence that dimension. So I would have to find a way to influence the bodies or the form of beings that already exist in that dimension, right? And because I am a, quote, higher dimensional being in three dimension, going down to two, perhaps the shadow beings in the second dimension would worship me because I appear more formed, or at the very least, I would appear not as a shadow because it's still a second dimension, but I would be distorted in a way, but I would be different. So perhaps they would worship me. And if I was a dick, right, I would kind of be like, yeah, worship me because I'm not a god in the third dimension, right? So I would, if I was able to shift down to the lower dimension, I would then, one, I would need a two-dimensional being to be able to affect change in that reality. But that doesn't mean that I'm a god of that, of the second dimension. I just happen to be an entity that was able to drop down to that dimension. Now, if a bunch of humans figured out a way or ways to go to lower dimensions, then those lower dimensions would perceive humanity as gods. But we're not. We found ourselves in this world the same way anything else found themselves in our reality, in the multiverse even. But yet, this is something that consistently kind of occurs. We hear about it over and over again throughout religion. So I wrote gods as cannibals because I wanted you to think about this idea of heaven and religion and hell and what that looks like, right? I have this thought. And the thought was, what if everything that's written about in these religious books were actually true, real, on some level, somewhere in a dimension that we can't sort of reach, at least while we're in this physical form? But should you believe strong enough in these dimensions, once you exit this reality, once you die, for example, and by death, it's not a permanent thing, it's just your soul leaving this form and leaving this dimension, could your belief drag you? Think of like the movie Ghosts, like the, if you need a visual, but could your beliefs drag you to a dimension where there is a heaven, but it's Yahweh's heaven? I keep picking on Yahweh because that was the religion I grew up like with. And so that's something that's familiar to me. But imagine that the heaven that Christians keep telling us, you know, they're going to, imagine that's absolutely real. And that if you believe in it, while you exist in this reality, that's exactly where you're going to go. And you will stay there for as long as you feel as though you deserve to be there. Which would then mean then that all the people alive right now throughout space-time as well as in the past and in the future who believed in this Hebrewic God, Abrahamic God, are now, at least their souls, are now actually in this heaven. And it's not to say that, because somebody would be tempted to respond and say that maybe, not even maybe, judgment day is in the future, and so people who die right now are only going to go to is it purgatory? Okay, that's fine, but the future is now because all time exists simultaneously. So if you died, you would go to purgatory, but then eventually now you would be in quote unquote heaven. And all of the people throughout history who believed in heaven and feared going anywhere else because they're only told about heaven and hell as the possible afterlives, like depending on their religion, right? Their religion closes them. They know that there's only two options to go to after death. And so once they die, their mind knows that that's the only places that they can go. So they hope with all their heart that they can go to heaven. But then everyone that's ever died that believe in heaven and believe and follow the steps to go to heaven end up in this version, just one version of heaven. Remember that across the world, there are 8 billion people, and not everybody subscribes to the same religion, but across space-time, there have been billions of people who also had their own personal beliefs, right? Valhalla, for example, the Vikings, right? Like, they also had their beliefs, but I'm saying that all of these places are real, quote-unquote, as real as this reality is. And everything that you've come to understand or expect from what heaven would be is what heaven actually is. And so think about these non-physical beings who come into our world, but can only exist in thought forms, like in the mind. They cannot be perceived with the physical senses, but they can sort of attach to the mind and speak through the mind and things like that. And then they come here to to recruit souls to their dimension. And then once you get to their dimension, after you leave this one, and I must repeat that there are an infinite amount of dimensions beyond just the one that we find ourselves in. Or I should say, it's been written that there are many worlds. And but let's just say that you are socialized to believe in just one or two possible realities that you can exist in. Once you get there, once you die, you're immediately taken to this quote heaven, or at least one of the heavens. But then everything that you believe about heaven becomes real to you. So in Yahweh's heaven, there are a bunch of houses, and you're, for all of eternity, your existence is essentially you getting up, because you're not going to eat, because you're not in a non-physical dimension, right? You're giving new bodies. So you get up every morning, you don't have to shower, you have a new body, and you literally just go and pray to Yahweh for all eternity. I'll say that again. Like, imagine there are non-physical intelligences that come to this planet, and not just Yahweh. Like I said, I'm just picking on Yahweh because that's the religion that I grew up with, but there are people. This is very prevalent in the LA area as well, that are kind of going to these retreats or to these like group gatherings where they are communing with non-physical entities. And these non-physical entities are promising them abilities so long as these people allow these entities to work through them. Right. Now, you don't know. A lot of people that have talked about this, they just assume, oh, well, this is a non-physical being, it's superior, and so I'm going to open myself up to this. You don't know these, like, that doesn't even make any sense to me. It's almost like saying, like, I'm going to go to a public market, and I'm just going to be like, hey, anybody who wants to, like, come to my house, go ahead and come to my house. Right. Except that if somebody comes to your house and you realize you don't want them in your house anymore, you know how to get rid of them. Like, you could call the police or literally get them out of your house because they're physical just like you. But if you allow a non-corporeal entity from a different dimension to attach themselves to you, they would have to be from a different dimension. I know it sounds wild, but it would have to be from a different dimension because they're not 3D. They don't exist in this reality. You cannot perceive them beyond just like, I think, a limited sort of a feeling, or like sometimes people can perceive them, but it's like out of the corner of your eye. So they're there the way I would be there if I dropped down to the second dimension. I would be sort of loosely 2D, but not quite. Right. You don't know what these things are. They're strangers. You don't know what these beings are. They're strangers. And people, I'm hearing more and more about people who are opening themselves up to these entities. And it's not even unique to them, because if you think about religion throughout space, time, right? That's what people have done. I just finished a book. I think it's called The Return of the Gods or something like that. Terrible book. I've hit a spell. I'm just shit books lately, but I'm still reading through them. I'm still powering through them, because even though I don't like I don't agree with the conclusions that the authors are writing about, it still, regardless, even a bad book still has information in it. And so I am grateful for them, for these books, whether or not I agree with the premise and the conclusions of the author. That's besides the point. But these religions, right, we've heard about, we know about Yahweh, but we also have heard of Baal. We've heard of Inanna. We've heard of Moloch. We've heard of all of these sort of ancient Zeus, Athena, Apollo, Isis, like Ra. Like we've heard of all of these sort of beings. I don't even know if Isis and Ra even count, because they at least, and I don't know if, yeah, I had to kind of think if those count, because I think that those at least presented in physical form. But the other ones, the earlier ones that I mentioned, like the Baal and Moloch, they're never said to actually take on physical form. Okay. Or they might appear physical, but that's different. They're not said to take like physical avatars, like to present in human form. So that might be something different, but we don't know what these things are, right? On one end, you have some of our brightest minds that just refuse to acknowledge the fact that there could be intelligences that we could not perceive. They're stuck on, these are scientists that are stuck on, the only way we would be able to find intelligence is if we go on a spaceship or a space rocket, or take, you know, a spacecraft out, you know, to another planet and then travel through space-time that way. Like that's where we have been. They have said that this is the only way that a person can travel through space-time. And so this is what we have to develop. Then you have people who do like psychedelics that repeatedly go to the same dimension where they see the same creatures. Right, the elves, for example, the DMT elves, no matter where a person is on this planet where they take DMT, they still experience the same species of creatures called the DMT elves. Like you can Google it. So that tells me, and this is completely unrelated, but that tells me that somehow your mind, your soul, your spirit, whatever you want to call it, is exiting this reality and going to another dimension. Because why collectively are people experiencing the same species? That to me is pretty telling, right? So it's not really so far-fetched to think that if we can travel to another dimension using mind-altering drugs and psychoactives, could other entities do the same? And why then are we assuming that because they are intelligent or they offer us knowledge that they've gathered from their reality, that they are benevolent because they said that they were good? Okay. As I said, I tend to, this may not resonate with a lot of people. Like people might hear this and be like, no, Joe, like you don't even know. Like you have to have the experience, whatever. That's fine. Like you do you. But I'ma do me. Like I personally don't want to mess with things that I don't understand in this reality. But to go back to the gods being cannibal thing, right? Your soul, your energy, they feed on you. It's very interesting that every fiction that has been written about gods and them losing their powers over time, it's because, like, American Gods, I didn't read the series, I probably need to, but I did watch a couple episodes of the series, and it was the same sort of idea that when people stop believing in a particular god, the god essentially fades away. So it needs their belief, a god, quote unquote god. I would call them a false god, because if once again they're not presenting in their own avatar, if they're not incarnated, right? Like if they're not taking physical form to affect change in this reality, then they're parasites. They don't have the ability to. If they need you to do that, to move in that way, to affect change in the reality, then they're in this reality, then they're not what they're claiming they are. Right. So what if they come to this world? And this world's been around for billions of years. I think 4.6 billion to be exact, right? So we don't really know a lot. Like we've only, and by we, I mean humanity, not our soul, because you could have reincarnated as other intelligent species. There's a video on my YouTube channel. Go check them out. I think the video is called like the most thought-provoking video you'll ever watch in the simulation hypothesis. But basically what I say in that video is that could it be possible, but that who you really are, intelligence, could just keep coming back as different kind of intelligent versions of whatever creature we see on this planet right now. So right now we are living in the era of the intelligent ape, but you're not an intelligent ape. You're just in an ape that has been made intelligent through consciousness. Consciousness being intelligent. And I've argued that in the past, could there have been consciousness in reptilians, in reptile form? So making like a consciousness intelligence taking the reptile form and making them intelligent to then create an intelligent civilization, which might be why we have this sort of Akashic memory of intelligent reptiles. And I'm not prepared to say that they don't exist even right now, but that also could mean that in the future there could be a race of intelligent insectoids. Like this just could loop over and over again. 200,000 years is not a long time compared to 4.6 billion years of existence, at least by this reality's measure. So what else could have been, right? But to go back, if I were a parasitic entity that I needed energy, right? Because everything is energy. People like to say that, oh, it's all energy. It's all vibes, man. Like you're just vibrating on the same wavelength and I could feel your energy. Like people forget that energy needs to be consumed. Like energy, everything is energy for something else. I'll say that again. Like you can't talk about things and say, well, this is energy and your energy is vibe. Like think about the word energy. It's fuel for something else. Like we all feed on something and something's feeding on us. Right. So if I needed energy, and let's say like psychic energy that can only be presented or I guess procured through the human race or at least humanoids or even collective consciousness or just whatever it is that we really are. Right. And I was from a different dimension. Right. Think about it. The collective consciousness is only a reflection of us in this reality. Other dimensions could have their own collective consciousness, their own Akashic records. Think about that, okay? I would, right? So why would we want to go to other planets? Well, because there might be forms of energy that we could harvest and bring back. If that's too far-fetched for you, think about like just exploration with naval ships, naval explorations, right? Why did the British leave England? Because England was like a very small island with shit weather and not enough resources. So they went exploring to get energy resources to fuel their civilization. Imagine. Think about what happened with Christianity, right? I was watching Marco Polo's, only two seasons. It's not something I actively even chose. My husband started watching it and then I just like passively started paying attention. It was actually a pretty good show. Got canceled because it's on Netflix. That's what they do. But you start to see Christianity start even infecting the Mongols and the Chinese, which was very fascinating to me, right? But they wanted these people, they needed these people to believe in their God, in their religion, so that they can then go in, infiltrate and take their resources and their land. That's literally what it does over and over again. They use religion as a bait And then they would go in, the Crusaders, whatever, they would go in, and then they would take resources, because everything is energy. Right. So now imagine the same thing, but like on a ethereal multidimensional level. I am a non-corporeal entity. At least I appear non-corporeal in this reality, right? But I'm from a different dimension and I need energy. So I send in recruits, right? To show up and talk to humanity, to the human race. And I say, I show up in dreams. I show up in seances. I show up in, you know, channeling or whatever. And I say, believe in me, believe in me. There's this other dimension that you can come to. And then you believe. And then once you believe, they kind of attach themselves to you, claim themselves as yours. And then claim yourself as theirs, right? And then they work through you. You pray to them, right? It's all energy. Like, that's energy. You praying and mentioning this thing's name and, you know, thinking about it. That's all energy. You ever notice that, like, you'll think about a person and they'll call? Like, that's on a very microscopic level, that's a connection, but that's energy. Now imagine that that's happening on like an even like concentrated version, right? Like you could pray for somebody even in this world and send them positive thoughts. And then it's been shown that you praying for somebody could actually heal them. Positive thoughts are absolutely effective. You don't think that that's potent. You don't think that that's powerful. That's powerful. So, right. That gets kind of sent back. That gets sent through. Now, imagine these things now. They attach themselves to these people. And it's not just Christianity. It's not just Yahweh. It's whatever. Whatever it is that the person has subscribed to and chosen to sort of attach to themselves has now claimed them. And then when the person exits this world through death, this thing now escorts them and takes them to another dimension where they could sit and pray for all eternity to this God. I actually had a dream. I just had a deja vu moment. I actually had a dream where something like that was happening, where I saw people being kind of sucked out of this world as they died to another dimension and literally for all eternity, or at least until they realize, wait, this isn't what I think it is. They just had to just get up and pray. Like, that was it. For all eternity, all they did was pray. I think it's interesting that the word pray sounds like prey. Like predator, prey, P-R-E-Y and P-R-A-Y. Maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know. But, right. Look up thought forms. Look up tulpas. And then kind of think about what I've been saying. But imagine this is actually going on. That means that everybody who believes that they're going to heaven, they're absolutely going to heaven, or at least they're going to a heaven, some sort of dimension. And then that's where they're going to be with other people who believe the same way for all eternity, just praising their God or this thing that has presented itself as a God. I don't know about you, but I think I ran this to my husband or by my husband yesterday, and he was like, that sounds like hell. All of eternity, all you could do is just pray to this thing. You're just worshiping this thing. And I don't know if you've read about what this being is capable of, but I would suggest that you go back and you read the Old Testament. If you don't want to, there's a book called God, the Most Unpleasant Character in All of Fiction. I don't know if I agree that it's fictional, only because I've learned that things that appear fictional to us may not actually be fiction, because why could you conceptualize or conceive of something that doesn't exist? I painted this, painted that, but that doesn't mean that there aren't people who look like this in real life, yet they were constructs of my imagination, but that doesn't mean that they're not real somewhere. These are just sort of physical representation, at least a copy of a person that probably exists through space-time. So just keep that in mind when you could say that this is a fiction, which in a way it is. It's a construct of my imagination, but that doesn't mean it's not real or it's not a representation of something real. I'm going to need you to really think about that. So the same could apply to hell. Right? I don't believe in hell. I think it's interesting that hell sounds like Helios, right? Like the sun, sun god Helios. But Hel also, in I believe it was a Nordic mythology, Hela was the goddess that was in charge of the afterworld, and it was just the afterworld. It didn't have the connotations of fire and brimstone that it has now been come to be associated with. Right, so I don't believe in that. But if you believe in Hel and you believe that you're going to there, well, it is a, it's a manifestation of a thought collective, or it could be, or it could really be our belief in it. It could very well be an actual place, right? I don't know if I believe that it's the biblical hell, but it could certainly be an actual place that people who wrote these stories or who believe these stories either have now actualized or are talking about. And then if that's the case, and then you believe in there, then that's where you're going. That's terrible. believe nothing. Or at least believe that when you leave this world, that the entire multiverse is yours to experience, and not that you're going to just go to this place. Like, I've been thinking about, let's just leave that. But not that you're going to go to this place and then for all eternity, because your belief in that is what's going to actualize that. Even people who are like, that talk about like reincarnation and this place being a trap, and I've talked about it as well. You just have to be careful of be mindful of not accepting that as a possibility for you. Because if you accept it as a possibility for you, then it will become a possibility for you. And why even do that? I prefer to believe that once I exit this reality, that the entire multiverse is mine for exploration. And maybe I will go, as you guys have often heard me joke about, to Harry Potter's Wizarding World, because I think that would be pretty dope. I wanted to read this to you guys because when I read it, it kind of unlocked a section of my brain that just, I like that. I like when I come across things that just make me go, wow, I never thought about it like that. So I'm going to share that with you guys. Here we go. It says, cells are created and then die constantly, and yet the body's form is retained. So I'm sure you guys have heard that, right? That like every year or every 7 years or whatever. Is it every year? Or let's just say it's every year. Like, you're constantly generating new cells, okay? So in fact, all of the cells in our body are completely replaced every 7 years. So how do cells know what to grow into? Is it possible, or is it plausible, that the complex and chaotic conditions that existed during the genesis of specific cells during birth are replaced each time a cell is damaged or aged and needs to be replaced? When we cut our fingers, what makes the fingerprints cells grow and heal exactly where they were before? How is it that even though each cell in the body has changed in 6 months, we can instantly recognize the face of a friend we bump into after a year's absence? Richard Feynman asks, the atoms in a brain are being replaced. The ones that were there before have gone away. So what is this mind of ours, these atoms of consciousness, which remembers what was going on in a mind a year ago? Right? Basically, what all these things are saying is that if our cells are constantly being replaced, then something else is responsible for the form that we're presenting to you. I've always had this scar here, and I don't even know. I think it's there. But like, it's always there. I think it was like from measles or something as a kid, but it's always been there. But the thing is, like, if our cells are constantly regenerating, then why does it regenerate into a scar, right? If I only cut myself, right, then why is that scar, does that scar damage my DNA? It shouldn't, because it's just a physical, like, superficial damage, and yet the scar kind of replicates as your cells replicate. And it's the same thing. You could meet somebody like 30 years later, and on some level, you'll be able to recollect like who they are, remember who they are. even if you, the last time you saw them was when they were a kid, like their face could be wrinkled, but you'll for the most part be able to go, oh my gosh, that was, and you could, it would all kind of flood through and your brain just kind of reconstructs. So the idea, the question being asked here is that, is there some sort of morphic memory responsible for what is being presented? I'll carry on. So Deepak Chopra gives us a good example of how well forms are maintained. He said that if a doctor takes a patient's x-ray and discovers a malignant tumor, and then a year later takes another image and that same tumor shows up, the doctor is not accurate in calling it the same cancer because the cells that showed up the year before have been entirely replaced. What he's really seeing is a result of a memory that has persistently reincarnated or is persistently reincarnating again and again in a new tumor. Now, that excerpt is from Your Invisible Body in the Quantum Universe. I'd recommend the physical copy of the book. The Audible version was really hard to follow. The narrative was terrible, but lots of great information there. The tumor part was what really got me to think, because it's a fair point. Assuming his assumptions are right, I mean, he wrote the whole book, so clearly they fact checked that, and that your cells are constantly regenerating every year. And according to search engine, absolutely true. It's actually shorter than that. I typed in how often do your cells regenerate, and the first article is Scientific American. It says our bodies replace billions of cells every day. Another article says, this was once again Scientific American, about 330 billion cells are replaced daily, equivalent to about 1% of all our cells. In 80 to 100 days, 30 trillion will have replenished, the equivalent of a new you. So in 80 to 100 days, you're a whole new person. So then why the fuck would a tumor persist? What's going on? What's going on? It says your body rebuilds itself in 365 days. Over 90% of your body's cells are replaced with new ones in 365 days. So it's a bit of a contradiction to what Scientific American is saying, but I'm going to go with Scientific American and just say, like, okay, 80 to 100 days, 30 trillion will replenish, the equivalent of a new you. So if I'm a new me, then why do I have old scars? Why, what's going on? Like, there's a lot to think about there, right? It's like, do the physical changes that we make get reflected upon our DNA? What Richard Feynman and I forget the other author, I think Rupert Sheldrake, I believe it was Rupert Sheldrake who said, let's discard what I said about Feynman and let's focus on Sheldrake. He's saying that there's a sort of a morphic memory that is essentially being imposed upon our cells. And even though they're regenerating, it's regenerating like the same sort of like, they're like the same copy of some memory, of sort of a holographic projection. But to me, it seems like something faulty went on. Like if I'm regenerating I'm Doctor Who basically, right? Because if I have more than 12 incarnations, I'm like reincarnating. By that definition, we're reincarnating every year or every 100 days, depending on what source you go for. If I'm reincarnating, then why do I still have the same scars? And why would a tumor persist? It's a damage, right? Like it's a malfunction. It's a genetic mistake. I forget the word I'm looking for. But why would it then repeat? Did something go wrong? Is there an inherent ability for the human body? Obviously there is, because it was saying it right there that it does regenerate. Something has happened to make it so that that regeneration is that it's also copying mistakes. So could it, and it's copying detrimental mistakes. So could it be altered? If Sheldrake is right, and this is a mind projection on the holographic, the DNA itself is projecting this holographic image of what we, how, you know, how we're supposed to look like. Could you then mentally alter your perception of yourself so that that begins to be reflected on what people perceive? And could you mentally heal yourself? Of course you can, right? We've talked about in the past, what's the word here? Not nocebo effect, placebo effect, right? What you believe occurs. If you believe that something's going to heal you, then it can heal you. So if, or is it possible, kind of like I mentioned in the beginning of, if we're born into a reality where people cannot see, then their perception of reality would be completely skewed towards, let's say, hearing instead of seeing, so much so that they would come to discount the accounts of people who said that they were able to see things. And if more, if the newly born humans, 10,000 years from that point where humanity loses its ability to, I hope it's not in the section that got cut off. I'm going to assume that it's not. But let's say 10,000 years after, assuming that this did get cut off, right? I don't think it did, but assuming it did. But basically what I said was, imagine that there's like a virus that wipes out humanity's ability to see. Now project yourself 10,000 years into the future. Our world would look completely different. Now imagine that babies start being born and they have adapted to no longer be able, like to no longer be affected by this virus, and that they are able to see. Because humanity had just sort of adapted to being blind, those babies that would be able to see would be considered freaks. It would be considered like anomalies. Like they would be almost like pushed out of society, right? Because one, society is now built up to cater to people who are now unable to see. And everybody 10,000 years from this moment who in the future can no longer see, it's considered normal to not be able to see. So if a baby is born with the ability to see, they are, even though that is normal and how the human being was meant to perceive, you know, photons, to perceive light, they, because their society is sick, or the society has developed to adapt to a sickness or a sick state, then a baby being able to see would be considered some sort of a freak, an anomaly, an outlier. And if it's anything like the society that we lived in, they would even be doubted. Like that child would probably have to move through society pretending that it couldn't see. Not even say that that child could constantly see, but imagine if every once in a while it saw color. They would dismiss this child's ability to perceive color as a hallucination. Doesn't that sound like what's happening? What's happening, obviously, to people who report being able to perceive other, like not like extra dimensional beings. And to take it back to the healing, if you have the ability, if your cells have the ability to regenerate, then something happened along the line where that caused the human body to regenerate damaged cells when it shouldn't be. That within itself tells me that there is an inherent ability, innate ability to heal itself. Obviously, we can heal itself, but to stay healed. But yet, it's regenerating. It shouldn't have been, like, me cutting myself shouldn't damage my genes. But something has happened where, for whatever reason, once you damage the body, the DNA is now sort of projecting that damage, even though it's also generating new cells. And that's a problem. That shouldn't be the case. There's something happening there. And that should be, we should be paying more attention to that. Because who knows what else we think we know about how this world is supposed to be, that in the billions of years that things have kind of come and gone in this world, or they're largely lost, we seem to think that this is just how things are. Like even just with something as basic as aging, let's not even discuss being able to perceive extra dimensional beings. And who's to say that human beings thousands of years ago weren't able to fully see extra dimensional beings? I mean, we talk about shamans and things like that. But are they special? Beyond just that, a person with a shamanic ability, could they just have been like how humans were intended to be? And then something happened, some sort of shift, some sort of change, even some sort of programming, some sort of knowledge made it so that we, the rest of us, the greater part of society, can't perceive these things and see them for what they actually are. And so it makes them easy for them to, makes it easy for them to kind of prey on us and demand worship from, and we do. Like, really think. See, like I said at the beginning of this episode, it's about challenging what we think we know, because we don't really know a lot. And so if you could take that and you just start really questioning everything, not in like a rebellious way, it's just more, like I said, it's just a thought experiment. I'm not saying that's right. It's just a thought experiment. But if you could take the fact that, okay, you may not know everything, if you could take that and you can work with that and you start challenging, okay, this is what I think I know about this world, but what if I'm wrong? Could there very well be a whole dimension above us, but we can't see? Literally a mirror world, but we can't see. A mirror world that's made of dark matter, just like this one, but we can't perceive. Just because we can't perceive something doesn't mean it's not there. Another thing about DNA and its expression is that things could change from one parallel universe to another. We're not even talking about dimensions, just one. Because whenever they do shows or fiction about that feature like parallel universes, they always kind of look like you. So the idea is that my parallel self would look exactly like me, but maybe with short hair or whatever. But the way DNA kind of expresses itself, it maybe not. Right? Just because it's a parallel, it could be a parallel Earth even. But if we remove the idea that Earth, that Homo sapiens have been the only intelligent life form to exist on Earth, and we kind of pull in my theory that, you know, a parallel universe could contain intelligent reptiles or intelligent insects or intelligent fish people, whatever, then one, just as there could be interdimensional entities, they could be multiversal, I don't know what the word is, interuniversal entities as well, that would be able to pass through wormholes also into our reality. And they wouldn't necessarily look human. They could look reptilian. They could. So this, I think, ultimately is the, they could be non-physical, right? I keep coming back to it because, one, it's worth repeating. These are kind of grand ideas that I talk about or touch on briefly, but I want to go back and kind of revisit them. You know, this podcast, every episode is different. And every episode I bring up like an idea that's kind of really thought-provoking. And then we sort of move on to something else. But there's something to be said about going back and revisiting ideas and like taking a different approach to it or a different perspective through, you know, to it, because that's how you learn. I've always said the repetition is how you learn. And I realized that because I've had people reach out to me and say, you know, could you talk a bit more about this? And I had this bad habit of like thinking, well, I've already talked about it the one time. Is it worth revisiting? But obviously, like, a lot of the concepts that I've discussed in this episode have now been taken as sort of a novel approach with new information added into it. But the idea is that hopefully by the time you finish listening to this, you think about, for example, like the most fun idea in this episode for me was like death. That sounds terrible, but like in the sense of when you leave this plane, this planet, right? Could you be, by the beliefs that you have now, could you essentially be prepping yourself to end up in a reality or existing in a dimension where you're signing yourself up for something where you are now praying to some non-physical being? You are now prey to some non-physical being for either all eternity or until you go, wait a minute, something's not right here. Really wants you to think about it. The book, I think it's called, I mentioned it earlier with the Deepak Chopra quote, but I think it was like Your Invisible Body in the Quantum Universe. But he said that like there could be heaven even right above us. He said it in like in the gravitational field of Earth. I don't know if I agree with that. I still want to think that it's multidimensional, but let's just say that they're astral. It could be right above us though. And then that means that like in different parts of the world, in different countries, if you are, for example, like in Tibet and you believe in a Tibetan heaven, then that's where all of the people who believe that same way right above Tibet, like they're going to go to that heaven, right? But that means then that all of the people who are in this reality, or I'm not saying reality, rather this country that believe in a particular idea of heaven, right? And the thing, like the ideas that they espouse, where you're not supposed to drink, you're not supposed to smoke, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to, like all of the restrictions that they have imposed on themselves and that they want to impose on other people, that exists in some dimension outside of this one. And so for all eternity, they will end up in that kind of, in my opinion, repressive to me world. For all eternity, is that something that you really want to do? I don't know, maybe they do want to exist like that. That's fine. But to me, there's a part of me that takes a bit of solace. But then there's another part of me that thinks about the people that I love that believe that. And that's where they are going. And they always say to me, you know, you have to do this so that you can go to heaven. And it's bittersweet because on one end, it's like, I don't know if I want to go to your heaven. I don't know if I believe in like only one heaven. And if your heaven is a space where I can't do whatever, right? Where like it sounds super bigoted, you know, like you can't do this. It's very judgmental. And ultimately, it's going to be filled with very judgmental people as well. That's not my idea of like a good time for all eternity. And now imagine that, like, I don't know if I subscribe to the idea that it's right above us, invisible and within the gravitational field of this planet or plane or dimension. I do think that it would be another dimension, heaven or hell. I believe it would be another dimension, but who knows? There's nothing about that sounds like something that I would want to do for all eternity. And also, I've met a lot of people who believe those kind of things, and I don't want to spend all eternity with those sort of people. So these are things that kind of come up when we have these sort of discussions, and they're worth revisiting and they're worth talking about because, hey, what else is there to do while we wait? I always like to think about this world as some sort of like interdimensional hub, where things are just happening and we're not even aware. We're just like a train station. But also, if you believe that we're moving through space-time, it could also be like a vehicle within itself. And at certain points, people just kind of get off and other people get on and they exist in forms. And then, you know, they exit to go exist in a different form. And we're just kind of having this like eternal existence. Eternity is a very long time. So let's talk about the possibilities. Anyway, thanks for listening.